Brahmachari. Jamuna Tira Brahmachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraj Akacharya Ashtotara Shata Shishimat His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraj Akacharya Ashtotara Shata Shishimat His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki Prense kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shamakunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhana ki Garantarashimam Bhagavatam ki Nitai Gaura Premanandi O glories to the assembled devotees O glory to the assembled devotees. O glory to the assembled devotees. O glory to Shishi Guru and Shiguranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 22, entitled The Descendants of Ajamida, Text 22 all the way to 32, right? Sorry, 26 to 32, 26 to 32. My computer went out of battery right now. So hopefully I can read. It's all right. So 32 is in the board, no? Okay, so I read. Text 26. Gandharyandri tarastrasya jakye putra shutam nripa Tatra Duryodhano Jyestho Dushala Chapikanyaka. Dhritarashtra's wife Gandhari gave birth to 100 sons and one daughter. O king, the oldest of the sons was Duryodhan, and the daughter was named Dushala. Shapan Maitunarudasya Pandokuntyam Maharatha Jatadharma Nilendribhyo Yudhishthira Mukashtraya Nakula Shahadevascha Madriyannasatyatashraya Draupadyam pancha panchavya putraste pitaro bhavam. Pandu was restrained from sexual life because of having been cursed by a sage, and therefore his three sons Yudhisthira, Bhima and Arjuna were begotten through the womb of his wife Kunti by Dharmaraj, the demigod controlling the wind, and by the demigod controlling the rain. Pandu's second wife, Madri, gave birth to Nakula and Sahadev, who were begotten by the two Akshwini Kumaras. The five brothers headed by Yudhisthira begot five sons through the womb of Draupadi. These five sons were your uncles.
Yudhisthirat prativindhya srutaseno brikodarat arjunach srutakirbistu satanikas tunakuli.
Translation: from Yudhisthira came a son named Prativindya, from Bhima a son named Srutasena, from Arjuna a son named Srutakirti, and from Nakula a son named Satanika.
Shahadeva suto rajam Srutakarma tatapare Yudhisthira tu pauravyam Devakota gatokacha Bhimasena didim bhayam Kalyan sarva gatastata Sahadeva suhotram tu Bijaya shuta parvati.
Translation: the king, the son of Sahadeva, was, O king, the son of Sahadeva was Srutakarma. Furthermore, Yudhisthira and his brothers begot other sons in other wife. Yudhisthira begot a son named Devaka from the womb of Paurabi. And Bhimasena begot a son named Gatokach through his wife Hidimba, and a son named Sarvagata through his wife Kali. Similarly, Sahadev has a son named Suhotra through his wife named Vijaya, who was the daughter of the king of the mountains.
Text 32.
And that's 2 days.
Kare nu matyam nakulo Naramitran tatarjuna Iravantan ulupyan vai Sutayam badrubahanam Manipura pateshopi Tatputra putrika shuta.
Please chant.
Karenumatyam.
In the wife name, Karenumati. Karenumati.
Nakulaha.
Nakula.
Naramitram.
A son named Naramitra.
Tatha.
Also.
Arjunaha.
Arjuna.
Iravantam.
Iravam.
Ulupyam.
In the womb of the Naga Kamya name Ulupi.
Vai, indeed,
Sutayam,
in the daughter,
Babhruvahanam,
a son
named Babhruvahana,
Manipura
Patehe,
of the king of Manipur,
Saha,
he,
Api,
Odo,
Tatputraha,
the son of Arjuna,
Patrikashuttaha,
the son of his maternal grandfather.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Nakula begat a son named Naramitra through his wife's name Karenumati.
Similarly, Arjuna begot a son named Iravan through his wife known as Ulupi, the daughter of the Nagas,
and a son named Babhruvahana by the womb of the princess of Manipur.
Babhruvahana became the adopted son of the king of Manipur.
Purport.
It is to be understood that Parvati is the daughter of the king of the very, very old mountainous country known as the Manipur state. 5,000 years ago, therefore, when the Pandavas ruled, Manipura existed and did is king. Therefore, this kingdom is a very old aristocratic Vaishnava kingdom. If this kingdom is organized as a Vaishnava state, this revitalization will be a great success, because for 5,000 years this state has maintained its identity. If the Vaishnava spirit is revived there, it will be a wonderful place renowned through the entire world. Manipuri Vaishnavas are very famous as in Vaishnava society. In Vrindavan and Navadvip, there are many temples constructed by the king of Manipura. Some of our devotees belong to the Manipur state. The Krishna conscious movement, therefore, can be well spread in the state of Manipur by the cooperated efforts of the Krishna conscious devotees.
Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Umilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Vanchakalpa Taruvyasha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Nama.
Is it Taraknath from Manipur originally? It's one of those mountainous country from Nepal. Nepal is. Bhakti Swarup Maharaj, he was from Manipur. Mother Rohini is from Manipur. And sisters. Yeah. During the 80s,
Srila Bhakti Swarup Damodar Goswami, he took this order of Srila Prabhupada, actually part of his life, he dedicated to two things, to the scientific, the science preaching. On the order of Srila Prabhupada, he was a science professor, so he was one of the devotees who started the Bhaktivedanta Science Institute. How is it called? Bhaktivedanta Institute. And he also took the task, this order of Srila Prabhupada, to try to organize Manipur as a Vaishnava, you know, kingdom or example. So he was very successful. So during the 80s, he used to travel all over the world with a troop of Manipur devotees. And it was very amazing. None of you saw, you saw. Yeah, he used to tour the whole world with his troop. There were like maybe like 20 devotees, dancers, ladies, and the male devotees who would do martial arts and drumming. This mardanga. It was pretty amazing. Do you see it, Karuna and Nidhi Prabhu? That the troop of Manipur devotees, they perform here, no? Yeah, it's a Vaishnava culture. The whole tradition is all Vaishnava tradition. So they're Kshatriyas by nature. So everybody learns these martial arts. So they have this, especially their sword, the expert sword. Sermon. So they will perform in the temples and then perform in Ratra Yatras and then perform in different stages. And they have real swords, like, you know. And then you see these guys, you know, with two swords. And then they do this demonstration. And it was like, you know, I mean, like one of those movies or something. And and then sparks will come out of the source, you know, hitting. And it was so fast. And, you know, like, everybody was like, you know, thrilled because, you know, it was dangerous. I mean, these are real swords and they were sharp. They show. And they will attack, you know, each other like, ping, 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 ping. And sparks will come out, you know, like that. Remember Krishna Arjuna? Very intense, yeah, you know, and they yes, they will have all these movements, you know, like, you know, they will go to these things, you know, these poses, you know, and then run to each other and then pa 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 pa, and then, you know, it was beautiful. And the ladies, then they will have these beautiful dances of the Rasa Lila, and they have these beautiful dresses. And the dresses, the skirts were such that they will dance, you don't see their feet, and the dress will be, you know, it doesn't move. It was a very, you know, constructed dress. So they were, you know, it looks like they were sliding, you know, like floating into the space like this. So they will move beautifully and they do all, you know, the Rasa Lila dance. One will play Krishna and then the gopis and Radharani. And there will be this beautiful thing and all of a sudden they disappear into the skirt. You go down in the skirt and they come up. It was exquisitely beautiful, like really, really beautiful. And
And then they will do the Mardanga demonstration. So what the devotees do now, you know, the Gurukul devotees, like the Manipuri, you know, devotees, Vishwambar and company, that they do is very much inspired on what these Manipur devotees used to do with the drum. The Mardanga in Manipur is not made of clay, it's made of wood. And it's a little more slim Mardanga. Sounds very beautiful too. And they will have all these acrobatic movements, you know, and everything coordinated. And they will have these turbans, you know, and all of a sudden the turban comes out, you know, and they start to do all these acrobatic movements with the Mardanga. Back maybe a few years ago, they were touring with this famous musician, a tabla player, super famous in India and here in the West. So he was doing a concert along with the Manipuri drummers. So they're still, you know, doing, and they were doing the same, you know, drumming thing. And so Swarup Damodar Maharaj, he used to preach all over the world, you know, to show the culture of Manipura. And Maharaj, ultimately the king of Manipura, gave him the temple of Radha Gokulananda, I think, in Radhakund. So where Maharaj is, ultimately his samadhi is there. It's right in front of Radhakund. And it is explained that the king of Manipura, he used to go there out into Radhakund. He was able to see, you know, the first rays of the sun, you know, reflecting on Radhakund. So it's something to say on the kingdom of Manipur. Would be nice to hear from Mother Rohini and his sisters. I mean, you can see on their demeanor like that, very very Vaishnava culture there. So we're back onto the narration of basically this is at the heart of the Mahabharata, the life and the story of the Kuru, the descendants of Maharaj Shantanu. And we heard up to the point of the birth of Dhritarashtra, Pandu and Vidura. And we heard that the circumstances in which each one of them took birth. And Dhritarashtra took birth as blind. He was the son of Ambika, the eldest wife of Vichitravidya. And Pandu was the son of Ambalika, and Vidura was the son of the maidservant of Ambika. And they were fathered by Vyasadev. And so these three sons came. And Dhritarashtra, because of being blind, he, although in the tradition of the Moon Dynasty, always the eldest son has a claim to the throne. We heard, you know, even with Shantanu was explained that just because his eldest brother was there, the kingdom was not properly, there was no auspiciousness, because it's supposed to be the oldest who have the claim. But Dhritarashtra being blind, that was not going to be possible. Although Dhritarashtra kept hold of that desire or that grudge in one sense, because that was his birthright and it was not given to him. So Pandu was very pale, but became very powerful because all of them, the three princes, got trained by Bhishma, grandfather Bhishma, and by Kripa Acharya in all the different arts of warfare or kshatriya, you know, duties. And they became very powerful. Of course, Dhritarashtra, he was not able to, he had the disadvantage or the incapacity with being blind, but by the blessings of Vyasadev, he actually was extremely powerful, like strong. The strength of Dhritarashtra was off the charts. It is explained that his strength was equal to 100,000 elephants. 100,000 elephants. It is explained that he was able to crush iron just with his hands. And we heard that at the end, after the battle of Kurukshetra, that he crushed an iron statue of Bhima. He just make it into pulverize it by his embrace. And so he was very, very strong and very powerful. Pandu became an expert warrior under the tutelage of Gangaputra Bhishma. And he was an expert archer. And eventually, when they came to age, under the Vidura also became very wise, and his position became more as a, almost like a brahmana. He was one of the main advisors of the kingdom, a very wise person. And the agreement was among all of them, grandfather Bhishma, Kripa Acharya, Vidura, and everybody, that Pandu will be crowned the king. So Dhritarashtra accepted, but he became very bitter about it. Inside in his heart, he was very bitter. And that proved later to be the cause of the whole Kuru destruction, the Kuru dynasty destruction. That bitterness and that attachment that he had, that somehow or other destiny had cheated him or took like an unjust way. He was treated unjustly by fate, because this was his birthright to be, you know, the emperor of the Kuru dynasty. So marriage was arranged for both Pandu and Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra's marriage was arranged by Bhishmadev. He chose Gandhari, which was the daughter of King Subala from the Gandhar kingdom. The Gandhar kingdom was conquered by the Kurus, and it was a smaller country. And during the conquering of the Gandhar kingdom, all the brothers most of the sons of King Subala was killed. There was one son that was alive, and his name was Shakuni, who was harbors this enmity and this desire for revenge towards the Kurus because of that. But the kingdom of Gandhar became part of the government of Hastinapura, of the Kuru dynasty, because they were conquered by. So Gandhari was extremely beautiful and extremely qualified princess. Very pious, very intelligent, very, very cultured. And she was basically the prized possession, in one sense, of the kingdom of Gandhar. And there was great hopes for the kingdom of Gandhar to unify with a powerful kingdom through Gandhari. So, but when they learned that Bhishma made a proposal of marriage, which basically was an order in one sense, because they can decline the Kurus, and the arrangement was to have the blind prince Dhritarashtra marry Gandhari, which Shakuni took it as a, you know, actually it was, how you say, when you add, you know, salt into the wound or something like that, it was, you know, yeah, too. Yeah, you put an insult into the injury already. So he was so enraged by this. He took it as a tremendous insult. That on the top of that, now the prized daughter of the kingdom of Gandhar has to be offered to this prince that is blind. He cannot be a king, he cannot, you know, he's blind. So what is this? What kind of insult is this? But Gandhari, it was of a complete different character, because she understood the statue of Bhishma Dev, and she understood also the relevance being connected to the Kuru dynasty. And she accepted that, but not only accepted the proposal, and she was fine and peaceful, but she also vowed that she will marry Dhritarashtra, but she won't be superior to Dhritarashtra by having sight. So she blindfolded herself for life to be on the same level of Dhritarashtra in terms of not having something that Dhritarashtra doesn't have. So both Bhishma and Vyasadev were very impressed and pleased with Gandhari, and they blessed her by the blessing of having 100 sons, 100 powerful sons. And Gandhari, by this gesture, became known as one of the handful of female personalities in the history of the universe, you know, the greatest examples of chastity and adherence to the dharma of a wife. Among her, this Mother Sita, and like that. So great, great personalities, Sati, like that. So Pandu, he got married to Kunti. Kunti was also an extremely beautiful, qualified daughter of King Surasena of the Yadu dynasty. King Surasena is also the father of Vasudev. And when he took birth, her name was Prita. So, and I think that's how Arjuna got the name Partha, the son of Prita. So, birth name is Prita, and King Surasena has a cousin, king, his name was Kunti Bhoja, who didn't have children, so he gave Prita to King Kunti Bhoja, and she became Kunti. She was the adopted daughter of King Kunti Bhoja and was known as Kunti. So Kunti was also an extremely beautiful and qualified princess. It is explained during her youth that once Durvasa Muni came to the kingdom, and Kunti served Durvasa Muni so nicely that Durvasa Muni, being pleased with her, gave her a benediction, gave her a boon. He gave her this mantra that she can call, upon reciting this mantra, she can call any demigod and have association and darshan with the demigod. And so is that picture that is over there. Once Kunti, while in her chambers as a young girl, was pondering upon this boon that she received, and she was curious to see if it works and how it works. So innocently, and not thinking about the consequences of calling for this, using this mantra, she, while looking at her window and see the beautiful sunny day, and the sun was there, and it was all very pleasant, so she thought, oh, wonder if this mantra will work if I call Lord Surya Dev. And she uttered the mantra, and Surya appeared. And as Surya appeared, he was summoned, so there have to be a result of this encounter, which meant she will receive a son from Suryadev. And Kunti freaked out. She was just a young girl, a young princess, unmarried, and now she's in this situation, and this powerful demigod, the sun god, is there telling her that now he's going to give her a son. So the poor girl just like didn't know what to do. So she pleaded to the sun god, and the sun god, understanding her situation, said she doesn't have to worry. Her virginity and her chastity will be protected, just like we heard of Satyavati. And the child will come out from her ear. Yes. And the child will be this powerful warrior that will be known all over the world by his prowess. And he will take birth with all kinds of protecting gear. So he have this armor that was just part of his body. And with that armor, he cannot be defeated. He cannot be wounded. It's protected. and he will be taking birth with these also earrings that were part of his body. So his name was Karna because he took birth from the ear of Kunti. So her chastity was protected, her virginity was protected, but there is this young girl with this baby. And she didn't know what to do. So she made this choice that rather than to have to confront all this, you know, this scandal that's going to get, you know, that because how she can prove, how she can say, you know, this, you have a baby and she's, you know, she's, so rather than to go through all that, she abandoned the child. She abandoned the child with a lot of pain in her heart. She was, you know, she's a highly elevated personality. And she prayed to the sun god to please protect the child and look after the child. So she put the child in a basket in the Ganga and left the basket just drift away with the child. The child later was picked by a chariot driver of was one of the chariot drivers of the Kurus, and he was raised by this chariot driver wife whose name was Ratha, so he became known as Ratheya, the son of Ratha. And so that's Karna. Then Kunti Boya, he arranged for a Swayambara ceremony in which the princess chooses the prince who will marry her. We heard that the Gandharva, you know, marriage. And Kunti chose Pandu. So she became married to Pandu. Later, Pandu, while conquering, so as Pandu became the king, he was so powerful that he, a very wonderful ruler, very qualified. And soon after he started to span the kingdom of the Kurus, so in one of the conquering expeditions that he did, he conquered the kingdom of Madra, and the king of Madra, he offered his daughter Madri also to King Pandu. So Pandu has two wives, Kunti and Madri. During one occasion, we hear here in the narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam how Pandu got cursed. And what was this curse? So it happens during a hunting expedition of Pandu. So while hunting in the forest, he saw two deers. And the two deers were engaged in their sexual thing. And he shot the arrow. He saw the two deers and he shot the arrow and he pierced the two deers with one arrow. And when he pierced the deers, he heard a scream, that it was a human scream of pain. And when he came, he saw that the deers, he came to the towards the deers and he saw that actually there were this sage. I can't remember the name of the sage. You remember the name of the sage? The sage and his wife had assumed the form of deers to actually engage in intimately. And they got shot. They deathly wounded. So the sage, he confronted Pandu. that, and he also saw that as when confronted Pandu, Pandu gave, he sort of excused himself by saying, you know, that actually according to the Kshatriya rules, one is, the Kshatriyas are allowed to hunt and to kill deers. So he was free from that fault. But the sage didn't see like that. He saw as an unrepentant, and also the fact that he killed him while having a sexual union with his wife. So he cursed him that when you approach your wife to have sex, you will die. So this, for a king, this was a terrible curse, because it means that his dynasty cannot be continued. So it is explained that Pandu then gave up the kingdom and went into the forest with his two wives to perform asceticism, to atone for the sin that he committed. The kingdom was left then on the care of the Dhritarashtra for the time being. Pandu then learned from Kunti that Kunti has this boon, and he ordered Kunti to call demigods to beget children. So he first asked Kunti to call the demigod of the law, Dharmaraj or Yamaraj. So from Yamaraj, then Yudhisthira was conceived. And then he said, Pandu said, now I want a powerful son. So the powerful demigod of the wind who can basically destroy everything. So call him. So from Vayu, the demigod of the wind, Bhima took birth. So Yudhisthira, as the son of Dharmaraj, became was to be extremely wise and an emblem of Dharma. Bhima, on the other hand, was going to be so powerful. So when Bhima took birth, Kunti was holding him, but he was so heavy that he fell in the ground, and he fell into a rock. And when he fell into a rock, the rock, you know, just like exploded, you know, like just pulverized. So powerful Bhima. And then Pandu asked Kunti to call for Indra. He wanted this powerful regal warrior, and Arjuna took birth. And then Madri, she didn't have sons, so she pleaded to both Pandu and Kunti to please, Kunti, use the, give her the mantra so she can also have children. So Kunti, you know, say yes. And Madri thought, okay, how can I get the most out of this? So she thought, okay, so rather than to call and one demigod, why don't call the demigods that are twins? They are Swini Kumaras. They're twins, so she got two for the price of one, basically. So she got the twins, Nakula and Sahadev. Kunti was a little unhappy. She got a little tricked, but, you know. So Nakula and Sahadev took birth. So then the five sons of Pandu were there. Now, they were known as the Pandavas. Now, simultaneously, during that time, actually before Kundika conceived children, Madri was pregnant. Gandhari was pregnant from Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra's desire is that, okay, now Pandu have left the kingdom. The kingdom of the Kurus was to be ruled by the eldest of the princes of these two brothers. So Gandhari got pregnant as Pandu went into the forest with no children. So Dhritarashtra say, well, now fate is settling things as they should be. Because although I was robbed of my birthright of being the king just by being blind, my son will be the king. So he was saying, you know, like that. He extended himself with his son, his eldest son. So, and it was all in place because the two, Kunti and Madri, the two wives of Pandu, they were not pregnant. And his wife was pregnant. And his wife has the boon of having 100 sons. So all is going to be all right, as Dhritarashtra was thinking. So, and Gandhari was very much united with Dhritarashtra. So they have, that was the settled desire. Now, somehow or other, the pregnancy of Gandhari went on for long, long time, way, way over 9 months, way over. And all of a sudden the news come from the forest in which Pandu is that the prince Yudhisthira have taken birth. And he took birth before Gandhari will conceive her children. So this was a big blow both from Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. Gandhari, in frustration, she started to hit her wound in, like, you know, in frustration of this, you know, this turn of events. And then she had this miscarriage. For her wound, this ball, gray ball, came. Just a mass of flesh, gray, just came out. This is described, you know, even like hairs, and, you know, it was like pretty disgusting. And that was extremely distressing. What is this? I got a boon that I'm going to have 100 children, and this is what it came out. So what is all this? So Vyasadev came, because Vyasadev, I gave her the boon and say, do not worry. He divided that mass of flesh into 101 pieces and put them in containers made of clay with water and closed them. And from each container, there came 100 sons and one daughter. The eldest of the son, however, when he took birth, Duryodhan, Vyasadev, Bhishmadev, Vidura, they were able to observe all these signs that were very inauspicious. It is saying, you know, that donkeys were doing this and jackals were doing that and crows were doing, you know, all kinds of inauspicious sign as the child took birth. So the wisdom would be, you know, get rid of this child, because this child will be very bad for the whole family. But of course, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari could not do that. So Duryodhan took birth, and then the 100 sons and the daughter. The daughter later got married to, I think, Jarasandha, which had, you know, quite a bit of a act in the whole Mahabharata later, you know, in the battlefield Kurukshetra too. So Yudhisthira was to be the king now. But Dhritarashtra had this thing that actually no, because I was supposed to be the king, my son then is supposed to be the king. But the king was Pandu. So you see all this drama that was there, all this thing, but it was due to the attachment and the internal dissatisfaction and anger of Dhritarashtra for his fate that so many events took place from then on. And then the description of all the different sons of the Pandavas were there, and all of them got killed, including, so the sons, all the five sons of Draupadi were killed after the battlefield. They were the only survival sons. They were killed after the battlefield by Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama beheaded them all, thinking that they were the Pandavas. So, and that's how we hear it in the first canto that Ashwatthama was being chased by Arjuna. Arjuna was to kill him, and he released the Brahmastra weapon, and then Arjuna releases Brahmastra. And then Arjuna took back his Brahmastra, but Ashwatthama didn't know how to, but Ashwatthama directed the Brahmastra to kill Parikshit within the wound of Uttara, and then Krishna saved Parikshit. So though the five sons of Draupadi were killed by Ashwatthama, the other sons of Arjuna, from the Naga king, Naga princess, from the Manipura princess, and for Subhadra Maharani, they all got killed. And Ghatakach was a pretty far out character too. He was the son of Hidimbi, and Hidimbi was this Rakshasa woman who got married to Bhima. So many narration of the thing. It's already a little past. I tell a little bit of, you know, this because it's a very fun part of the Mahabharata. Right after the Pandavas were trying to be killed in the house of Lak, in which Duryodhan make this whole plan to burn them alive, they escape by the help of Vidura. So they went incognito into this place. Actually, this place was none other than Eka Chakra, which Lord Nityananda later appeared. So they landed in the village of Eka Chakra. And on their way to the village of Eka Chakra, they encountered this Rakshasa, whose name was Hidimba. And Hidimba had a sister, Hidimbi, who, when he saw Bhima, this very powerful warrior, and very handsome, she became attracted. So she took the form of this beautiful lady, and she approached him to please marry her. And Bhima was not much into, but Hidimbi approached Kunti, and Kunti said, "It's fine, you know, she's, you know, it's a lady who's asking you, so you should fulfill." It's sort of something like apparently Kshatriyas have that type of rule that they can decline, you know, a proposal like that. So from that union came this son, Ghatotkacha, which also had a big part during the battlefield Kurukshetra, because he was such a powerful warrior and he was rendering havoc in the battlefield Kurukshetra to the Kuru warriors, that he came to battle in the battlefield while Karna was the general, and Karna was saving this weapon, invincible weapon, which was the thunderbolt of Indra. He was saving it to kill Arjuna, and it was, you know, just for Arjuna. But then Ghatotkacha was basically decimating the whole army, that he have to take that weapon and use it on Ghatotkacha. So he killed Ghatotkacha, Karna killed Ghatotkacha with a weapon, but then Arjuna was spared. So in this way, all the different sons, you know, of the Pandavas got killed. The only survival was Parikshit, which was in the womb of Uttara, and then he became the successor of the Pandavas. Any comment or questions? Yes, bro.
Thank you very much that you have remembered so many characters in Mahabharata. It's very wonderful things. And I was going to add one point that regarding Gandhari. Actually, Gandhar is a state in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Still it is there, it's Gandhar. And you can find that Krishna and Arjuna's chariot, still it is there. Recently, archaeologist and they found, but it is very strange that nobody can touch that. And whoever touched them is dead or something. They cannot enter or into that cave type something is there.
Wow.
So that US Army, they tried to enter, but you know, somebody died, they cannot approach. That chariot is still there. Yeah, it's a great fact.
yeah, it's true. The Gandhar kingdom is Afghanistan.
Yeah.
They were famous for during the Mahabharata time for the horses. They were, you know, expert horsemen, and especially with the swords too, expert swordsmen. Mm-hmm. So Shakuni was like that. Shakuni was so upset that he vowed he will destroy the Kuru dynasty, and he indeed, you know, was basically he hated Bhishma Dev too.
Yes,
he hated Bhishma because he thought Bhishma was the one who insulted them on the top of the, you know, and Bhishma was also the one who conquered Gandhar. So I think, actually, I'm not sure about that, but I know he have this hatred towards Bhishma, and he then, you know, unify with the son of Gandhari, Duryodhan and Dushasan. It became basically his, you know, he will manipulate them to cause this havoc. It was everything against what Bhishma would feel it would be the right thing. So Bhishma wanted, you know, Yudhisthira, he was the most qualified. But, you know, he was all against Bhishma, and with this bend of, you know, destroying Bhishma and whatever, you know, the representation of the Kuru. So that was Shakuni.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. Like Jitendra was telling me yesterday, and I agree with him, it's hard sometimes to follow all these characters and stories. But one thing I like to take from your class is you were mentioning Queen Kunti, and she had a problem that we all deal with. She made a mistake, and she was dependent on an upadhi, a title, to make herself feel good. And what was that? Virgin. And so there's that verse, obviously, Sarvupadi Virnamutam Tapadadwena Nirmalam. Hishikena Hishikesha Sevanam Bhatir Uchate. The only thing we need to feel important and good about ourselves is love for Krishna. And so there's a quote, forgive me if I don't remember exactly. Some quotes I remember, some I don't, but I really appreciate it. It essentially says that we're counting on, we have so many names on us that we don't even know our own name. We're counting on all the outside names, all the outside labels to make us feel important. You may not have the title of a CEO, but you have the same value. Value doesn't come from who you know or what you do. Fame and riches and titles, that may increase your net worth, but not your self-worth. So I have to ask the question, what are some steps we all could do to develop this humility? Because even in spiritual societies, they make you feel like I'm not so great because I don't have the title of virgin. But in the Bhagavatam, in Canto 1, Chapter 11, Verse 19, Prabhupada mentioned that particular verse mentions prostitutes and the glories of prostitutes and how Lord Krishna accepted them when he was leaving Dwarka. And in that purport, Prabhupada mentions that even prostitutes can be unalloyed devotees of the Lord. So they're not dependent on the title of purity or virgin to be considered great. Just only saving them bhaktir uchate, servant of Krishna. So what are some steps we could do? Because shame, we can't stay determined if we're dependent on these titles to feel good about ourselves. We'll leave either Krishna conscious or we'll somehow or other float in devotees but still feel miserable, no happiness, because we're dependent on these titles, you know, depending on whether we live the perfect life. So anyway, that was essentially my comment and question. You can or...
Well, I always remember the example of Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj when he brought to Prabhupada about this discrimination against black people within the society of devotees. Remember that? So he was saying that he was experiencing some discrimination. I mean, he didn't necessarily say all of devotees, but he said he had experienced some discrimination. And Prabhupada basically told him that, you know, if he do feel like that, then he's basically not different than the ones who are discriminating. So the thing is that we're so bent and absorbed in seeing what other people are doing, and not necessarily have the same type of focus on the things that, you know, the things that we're doing to actually sort of engage in that dynamic, you know, of people criticizing or this and criticizing. But, you know, we see, well, these are criticals, these are not doing that, you know, people should do this, people should do that. And that takes away from the energy of actually looking at, well, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that. You know, so it's much better that we just remind ourselves and cultivate the quality of self-introspection, that if something is disturbing you, you look inside. What is that that allows that disturbance to exist? Because if we are actually Krishna consciousness, then you know what is it, matra sparsas to kunteya, you know, it's either this way or that way, you know, it's you tansti tikshaba, you're able to tolerate. you're not affected by happiness and distress. Obviously, that's a high, elevated position, but that's what we're aspiring for. So how do we get there if we're not able to actually be introspective and trying to find what are the things in myself that gets me into this position of always being confronted this conflict? You know, that I feel this way, I feel that way. So is that's why, you know, the recommendation is amani na manane na. We offer respect, but don't expect respect towards yourself. That's huge. Big time. Big time purification that, you know, a lot of work that we have to do on that. Because basically you have to dissolve your false ego. So that thing, the Sarvabhupada Vinimuktat, you know, all these designations. But, you know, it's easy to just see, oh, this group of people, these devotees are, you know, acting in their false ego. They have these designations and they, you know, discriminating, or they're saying this or they're saying that. What about myself? You know? So, better. You tend your
I remember reading in a purport in Srila Prabhupada saying that Dhritarashtra was blind spiritually and materially, and that he was a fool. And I was thinking, you really read the Mahabharata in very much detail, Prabhu, the way you were just to just flow with it. It's something. What chapter were you? You know, because you were elaborating on this verse and stuff, but you were getting a lot of information from which chapter in the Mahabharata?
Can't remember.
Oh.
You know, I mean, back in ten time, there was this publication that Hiranand Maharaj had, you know, and it was not published, it was just, you know, like a binder.
Yeah.
And we had it in the Brooklyn Temple, and we read it, you know. And then it came Dharma something.
That was very good.
Yeah. That was very good.
I think we might have that in the gift store, maybe.
Yeah, and then I got one, you know, from India, one of those, you know, that have the translation on the verses.
Kamala Subhamanyu, the big thick one.
Yeah, four books.
Oh, it was four books.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so and then, you know, when I was in Tobago, that was during the time that they have that TV serial thing. So I also saw that, you know, the devotees used to have it. So, I mean, it's not 100% bona fide, but they give you a little bit of the drama of the thing. So
yeah,
I really liked it.
It seems like Vidura was kind of like Chanaka Pandit.
Yes.
What are some of his characteristics that you know?
Of Vidura?
Yeah.
Well, he was so wise that he became the Mahamantri, or the chief advisor of the kingdom of the Kurus. So that was his position. So he was the top, you know, I don't know how you would say, cabinet member or something, like government person that advise and guides. That was his position. And he tried so hard to keep Dhritarashtra, you know, to keep it in the right path, but it was a failure, until basically he had to leave. He was kicked out of the whole thing by Duryodhana.
They say a word to the wise is sufficient, but there's no end to the words needed to convince a fool.
Yeah, that's good.
Kind of seems appropriate there.
All right, super late, so I should quit now. Garantrashuman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.